One of the greatest moves of God in the Old Testament was when the people of Israel were freed from the hands of the Egyptians from slavery. These people witnessed with their own eyes some of the greatest miracles known to man. We're still talking about these miracles years later. These are people that walked the move of God. They lived the move of God. But we also see a tragedy. We see that even though they lived it and they walked it, we see that they completely missed it. So if you have your Bible, go ahead and turn to Numbers chapter 11 and verse number 1. Or if you have it on your phone, the Bible app, you can follow along there. We're also going to have it up on the screens. So if you just want to follow along there, you can do that as well. So Numbers chapter 11, verse number 1. And here we go. It says, "Soon the people began to complain about their hardship, and the Lord heard everything they said. Then the Lord's anger blazed against them, and he sent a fire to rage among them, and he destroyed some of the people in the outskirts of the camp. Then the people screamed to Moses for help, and when he prayed to the Lord, the fire stopped. After that, the area was known as Taberah, which means the place of burning, because fire from the Lord had burned among them there. Then the foreign rabble who were traveling with the Israelites began to crave the good things of Egypt. And the people of Israel also began to complain. 'Oh, for some meat,' they exclaimed. We remember the fish we used to eat for free in Egypt. And we had all the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic that we wanted. But now our appetites are gone. All we ever see is this manna. The manna looked like small coriander seeds, and it was pale yellow like gum resin. The people would go out and gather it from the ground. They made flour by grinding it with handmills or pounding it in mortars. Then they boiled it in a pot and made it into flat cakes. These cakes tasted like pastries baked with olive oil. The manna came down on the camp with the dew during the night. Moses heard all the family standing in the doorway of their tents whining, and the Lord became extremely angry. Moses was also very aggravated. And Moses said to the Lord, 'Why are you treating me, your servant, so harshly? Have mercy on me. What did I do to deserve the burden of all these people? Did I give birth to them? Did I bring them into the world? Why did you tell me to carry them in my arms like a mother carries a nursing baby? How can I carry them to the land you swore to give their ancestors? Where am I supposed to get meat for all these people? They keep whining to me, saying, "Give us meat to eat." I cannot carry all these people by myself. The load is far too heavy. If this is how you intend to treat me, just go ahead and kill me. Do you do me a favor and spare me this misery?" I'm calling this message today, How to Miss a Move of God. Father, for the next few moments, I ask that you would help me to communicate clearly. I pray that you would give me the mind of Christ. I pray, Father, that these words would go forth as you have intended them to go forth. I ask for your anointing, and I ask for your favor, and I ask it in the name of Jesus. We thank you today. Amen. I want to share a story with you. I think I've shared this story before. It's been quite a long time, but I know that we've got a lot of people in here that have not heard it, and it just fits so perfectly, and it just supports the point I'm trying to make today. So when we were in Colorado, and we were running buses there, in efforts to grow a bus route, we would do something called a bus blitz, meaning we would grab a group of people together. We would arm with clipboards and sign-up sheets, and we would get the bullhorn out. We would get candy, and literally, if the weather was nice enough, we'd dress people up as costume characters. Literally, we would just go out on the streets, and we would just look for kids outside and parents, and we would just knock on doors and invite kids to church. So this was called a bus blitz, and it was very successful. We would add 40 to 50 kids in a couple hours flat, just like that, with very minimal work. And so we were out one night growing a bus route, and we were blitzing a trailer park, a mobile home park, on the north side of the city. And we walk into this mobile home park, and we start down the main road leading into the mobile home park, and we get all the way down to the end where the road turns off to the left. And off to the side, there's this little rundown mobile home off of the right-hand side. And as we're walking in the road, I can hear the music blaring as we're walking along. And so I know someone's home. So I start heading off that direction and going across the yard there. And I turn the corner of the trailer and I walk right into a group of serranos. Now, if you don't know what a serrano is, it's a street gang. At this time, Greeley, Colorado, it might be different now, but this is the way it was when we lived there. They had three primary street gangs. First of all, you had the serranos, which means south side. It's a Hispanic gang, and they are actually affiliated with the Mexican mafia, so they're a very big gang, and they wear the color blue, and their number is 13, which the letter M is the 13th letter of the alphabet. So for the Mexican mafia. So that's the that's the serranos. And then we have the norteños, which is north side, which is their arch enemy. They wear the color red. They have the number 14 because the letter N in the alphabet is the 14th letter of the alphabet. And then you had a smaller group on the side of town called the Playboys. You didn't hear a whole lot from them, but primarily there was a lot of gang activity between the serranos and the norteños. And so I walk into this I walk around the corner and I walk right smack dab into a group of serranos. And I realize at this time I'm in this now. If I take off running, they're gonna think something's up and they're probably gonna shoot me. So I gotta keep going. And as I get into this mix, there's this guy over on the side right by the mobile home, and he's grilling burgers. And he's a short, stocky guy. He's completely bald. His head is completely covered in tattoos. He's completely decked down in blue. And he's got a big number 13 tattooed right down the side of his head. He's got 5 bars on his neck to signify he's been in prison 5 times. And so I said, well, this guy looks safe. I'll just go up and talk to him. And I didn't know what to say because my heart, my stomach's in my throat right now. And so I just said the first thing that pops into my mind, which is typically not, if you ask my wife, it's typically not the best thing for me to do. And so I look at him and I said, hey, I'm just here for a hamburger. And he just looks at me like, did this white guy really just walk in here and ask for a hamburger? And I realized after he's staring at me for about 3 hours, it's actually about 3 seconds, I said, I'm thinking I got to say something else. And so I just go right into my spiel. Hey, I'm Pastor Matt. I'm Pastor First Assembly just down the road. We got a bus. You might have seen it come right through here every Wednesday night. We pick up kids from all over this neighborhood. We're just out tonight looking for kids that want to come to church. Would you kids be interested? And he just looks at me. And finally, he nods over to the side where there's a group of ladies, and he said, go ask the mother. And so I'm standing there, and I remember looking at him, and I kind of glance to the side, and I see this group of ladies, and I kid you not, I'm thinking, I don't want to go talk to the ladies because they look like they could hurt me worse than you could hurt me. I don't want to go talk to the ladies. That's what I'm thinking. You think I'm kidding? That's what I'm thinking. But I'm in it now, so what do I do? So I walk over, and here's these group of ladies sitting around, and I just cut right to the chase. I just, excuse me, ladies. Hey, I'm Pastor Matt. I go into the spiel again, da-da-da-da-da. And as I'm giving my spiel of wanting to take their kids to church on a bus, I'm looking down at one lady, and I'm noticing that she's got a tattoo right under her neck, right across here on our upper chest, that says, trust no man, fear no. It starts with a B, ends with an H. It's a 5-letter word. You fill in the blanks, but please don't do it out loud. So I'm giving my spiel, and I'm not kidding. I'm noticing this tattoo, and I'm thinking, oh, dear God, she has trust issues with men. And I am one, and I'm asking to take her kids on a strange bus to a strange place they've never heard of before. And it dawned on me, I think I'm going to die. I think you're laughing at me, but this is really what I'm thinking. I think they're going to kill me and shove me under their trailer. I'm looking around for the team, and they're all the way down the block, as if to say, we love you, Pastor, but not that much. Good luck getting out of this one. And so, to my surprise, though, she looks at me and she says, sure, they can go. Can you come and pick them up every night? We start laughing, you know. Praise God for that. So we leave. Next night, the bus captain pulls up with the bus, and there's those precious little kids sitting out there on the corner waiting for us, and they get on the bus and ride to church. Second week, we go up, same thing, them precious little kids get on, go to church. Third week, we pull up, bus captain pulls up. There's those precious little kids again, but mom and dad, the mom was the lady with the tattoo, the dad was the guy at the grill, all tattooed up. They're standing there as well, and the bus driver pulls up, and they said, our kids have been talking about this for the last couple weeks. They love it. Can we come and check it out? And so the bus driver says, yeah, come on, sure. And so they get on the bus and they ride to church that night. And I remember that, sir, I still remember this like it was yesterday. We're sitting in an auditorium. Their auditorium was a little bit smaller than this one, but I remember there were seats right in the left backside about where our sound booth is, and I still remember those two sitting right back there. And I remember preaching to hundreds of kids that night. Place was just packed. And I remember giving the altar call, and I look back in the back, and there's mom and dad with their hands going up. They want to give their hands to Jesus. So I said, if you mean business, I want to know. I want every one of you that rose your hand to get down here to the front. And the kids just begin to come down to the front. And here comes mom and dad right down to the front. And so here's this altar call, all these kids spread across the front. And here's a couple of hardened gang members, fully tattooed, decked down in blue, broken before God, giving their hearts to Jesus Christ right in the midst of those children. Kyla befriends the wife, the lady. Come to find out she's pregnant. I think she was pregnant with her fifth child, maybe. Fourth or fifth. And she told Kyla, she goes, I'm scared to death. She goes, I've never had a baby out of prison before. She goes, I don't know how to raise it. And so Kyla's telling me this, and I said, well, what are we going to do? What can we do? And she goes, well, that's easy. She goes, we're going to have a baby shower for him. I said, what? A baby shower? I said, we're not going to have a baby shower. We can't have a baby shower for these guys. Are you serious? They're going to laugh at us. And she goes, we're going to have a baby shower. And so after much debate and discussion, we decided to meet in the middle, and we decided to have a baby shower. And then I said, well, let me see if I can get some room at the church. I'm sure we got a room at the church there that we could choose. She goes, no, we're not doing it at the church. We're going to do it in our house. And I said, what? Are you nuts? Do it in our house? And she goes, yeah, we're going to do it in our house. I said, we can't do it in our house. And after much debate and discussion, we decided to meet in the middle, and we decided to have it at our house. But I remember the night of the shower, I'm sitting with this couple in our backyard, and they're sitting there, they're sitting on two chairs to my left, I'll never forget this, and the dad just starts opening up to me, and come to find out he's not only a Serrano, but he's an upper-ranking official, he's one of the generals of the Serrano gang, so he's got a very high level, he's got a lot of power within the gang, but he looked at me and he said, I don't want this life anymore, I'm tired of running. He goes, I've had it. He goes, I want out, and I just don't know how to get out. If you don't understand the gang life, once you're in, a lot of times the only way out is death. They'll kill you. And so he goes, I don't know how to get out. But he goes, I don't want my children growing up like me. I don't want my children making the same mistakes. And you know something's happening in the heart of a gang member when they say that, because typically they raise their children. They're very generational, and so they raise their children in that, that environment on purpose to get them to go to that lifestyle. And so he says, I don't want this for my kids. But then the lady looks at me and she goes, I have a serious question for you. I said, what is that? She said, with all seriousness, she said, why are you doing this? I said, well, what do you mean? And she goes, well, we've talked about it. She goes, typically when people do stuff like this for us, it's because they want something. And we just, for the life of us, cannot figure out what you guys want from us. She said, there's nothing that we have that we could offer you that you would want. And I said, well, we don't want anything from you. I said, this is just what the church does. And she said, no, she looked at me and she said, no, it's not what the church does. I said, well, what do you mean? Explain that to me. And she said, we've been to many churches here in this city. And she goes, and I get it. She goes, we don't dress like everyone else. We don't look like everyone else. We don't act like everyone else. Our lifestyle's different. She goes, I get all that. But she goes, we feel like such an outcast when we're in these other places. We feel like we don't belong. She said, this is the first place that we've been in this city that we actually feel like we belong. And it dawned on me how the church has missed it. We grew to love that family. A great family. We love them dearly. We still do today. It was a great miracle that we were able to watch unfold before our very eyes. We lived in Greeley, Colorado several years, and I could stand up here literally all day and tell you story after story after story like that one. I could tell you the miracle of the furniture when someone donated 3 semi-loads full of furniture that we were able to give to the poor needy of the community, free of charge. I could tell you about the old abandoned skating rink that the city of Greeley offered to give us to start a dream center. They just wanted to see a plan. So I spent weeks writing the plan of what that would look like. Couldn't understand why I was doing it, because the day I went to turn it into the city, the lead pastor comes into my office and said, I've decided that we're not going to pursue that anymore. I got a change of heart. but we had tremendous favor with the city. I could talk about the kids and the youth that were changed by the power of God, many of which I'm still in contact with today. One young man messaged me on Facebook a couple years ago to tell me what God was doing in his life and to just thank me for the investment. Said he's starting a Bible study in his high school. Said, thank you for loving me when no one else would. Thank you for investing in me when no one else would. I saw more miracles in that short time span than I have seen in my entire life combined. And I sit back and I think of everything that God did in that season. And it truly amazes me. People are still talking about it today. However, it also breaks my heart. Because what I seen take place in that city was a great move of God. But it breaks my heart to the fact that even though I was right in the middle of it, even though I walked through it, God even used me to lead it. I completely missed it. And I look at what God is beginning to do right now in this church, in this city. In Colorado, we watch God do an amazing work, but I have a feeling in my spirit that it's nothing in comparison to what He is going to do in this city. We're beginning to see unravel before our very eyes something extraordinary, and we get to be a part of it. Stories will be told about what's going to be happening, not because of what man has done, but because of what God has done, because of the lives that God has changed. We're starting to walk into a place where we're going to be firsthand witnesses of a mighty move of God, but if we're not careful, even though we're right in the middle of it, we will miss it. I feel almost as if God has personally given me a second chance. Another chance to be a part of something huge where the masses are saved and set free for the glory of God. Another chance, another season of miracles, and I don't want to miss it this time. Now, some of you are asking, you're confused. You say, wait a minute, Pastor. What do you mean you missed it? What do you mean you missed a move of God? You were right in the middle of it, for crying out loud. How did you miss it? Well, let me explain. Let's go back and reread a couple verses from Numbers chapter 1. It says, soon the people began to complain about their hardship, and the Lord heard everything they said. Then the Lord's anger blazed against them, and He set a fire to rage among them, and He destroyed some of the people in the outskirts of the camp. Then the people screamed to Moses for help, and when he prayed to the Lord, the fire stopped. After that, the area that was known as Taberah, which means the place of burning, because fire from the Lord had burned among them there. So the first way to miss a move of God is by complaining. Always looking at the negative. In Colorado, when we started running those buses, there was a few people in the church that all of a sudden didn't like me anymore. If you can imagine that, because I'm a very likable guy. But they didn't like me anymore. And it caused me to develop what is called the victim mentality. I'm just being real with some of my faults today, so bear with me. Everyone is against me. Nobody likes me. I begin to whine and I begin to complain. When we carry the victim mentality, all we do is complain. And if we're not careful, we can get 100 compliments and we can get one negative comment. And we lay our head on the pillow at night and we're not focused on the 100 good things that are happening. We're focused on the one. It's like we totally ignore all the good stuff that God is doing. And that was me. I was so focused on the negative that I failed to see the miracles. I see them today. I look back and I say, wow. But I failed to see it when I was walking through it. It was right before my eyes. If I could go back and give myself a word of advice, I would look at myself and I would shake myself and say, wake up, you're missing it. I focused so much on the problem, I missed what God was doing. Here's what I realized today. There's always going to be problems. There's always going to be something else to fix. There's always going to be people that don't agree with you. There's always going to be people that don't like you. But we cannot allow this to take our eyes off the bigger picture of what God is doing right in front of us. If we complain about the piddly things that make no difference for eternity, we will miss the miracles happening right in front of us because our focus is on the problem and not on God. I made the mistake once, and I am bound and determined not to make the mistake again. Look at this. Look at what happens when we take our eyes off of God and we focus on the problem. Matthew chapter 14 and verse 22. It says, immediately after this, Jesus insisted that his disciples get back into the boat and cross to the other side of the lake while he sent the people home. After sending them home, he went up on the hills by himself to pray. Night fell when he was there alone. Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen and they were fighting heavy waves. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came toward them walking on the water. When the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, "It's a ghost." But Jesus spoke to them at once. "Don't be afraid," he said. "Take courage, it is I. Take courage, I am here." Then Peter called to him, "Lord, if it is really you, tell me to come to you walking on the water." "Yes, come," Jesus said. So Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on the water toward Jesus. But when Peter saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and he began to sink. "Save me, Lord," he shouted. Jesus immediately reached down and grabbed him. "You have so little faith," Jesus said. "Why did you doubt me?" When they climbed back into the boat, the wind stopped and the disciples worshiped him. "You really are the Son of God," they exclaimed. As long as Peter keeps his eyes on Jesus, he was able to do the miraculous and walk on the water. But as soon as he took his eyes off of Jesus, notice it says when he saw the strong wind and the strong waves, he was terrified and he began to sink. As soon as he switched his focus from God to the problem, he began to sink. I want you to know that the enemy will do everything in his power to keep your eyes off the one who controls the wind and the waves. Because he knows that when we focus on problems, we become weak. Just a few short weeks ago, many of you know, you heard the story. I know some of you haven't, but we were out on our bus routes. It was a Wednesday night. We were driving along in one of the neighborhoods. I noticed there was 3 kids. They were jumping up and down and on the sidewalk as we drove by. I thought they were trying to wave us down. I had 6 other adults on the bus that can vouch for this. They seen it all. So it looked like they were flagging us down, so we stopped. And typically, in my 20 years of running buses, that's very, very common. If I had a dollar for every time that happened, I'd be a wealthy guy. So it's very common that kids will see us and they'll flag us down there at a friend's house or whatever. So we stopped. Mother was on the front porch, kids up on the sidewalk, so they're a little bit closer to the street. We got out, just chatted briefly with the kids, and then turned our attention to the mother. Well, next thing I know, the mother's yelling at her child to get inside, and the other 2 kids take off running. Well, the captains get back on the bus, like, "That was strange. We have no clue what just happened there." And next thing I know, she goes inside and she calls the police. And the call hit the Green Bay Crime Facebook page, and the thing just blew up. Yeah, some of you are laughing. Of course, people don't have the full story, so some of the comments that were on there were extremely hurtful. But if you remember that I've said this before, this is our vision here at Green Bay First. I think we're going to pop it up on the screen. At Green Bay First, our vision is to be the bridge of hope to the people of Green Bay and surrounding communities. Our vision is to be the bridge of hope. Not just an ordinary church taking up real estate on a corner lot that just comes in and does a happy-go-lucky thing and then goes home. No, we want to be the bridge of hope for the people living here. Now, if we want to be a bridge, we have to understand that the purpose of a bridge is to be walked on. There's going to be times as a bridge that we're going to be walked on. It just comes with the territory. But some of the comments on there were pretty hurtful. It really discouraged me. I began to focus on the problem. I began to focus on the complaints, and I began to sink. The story of Peter, this story come back into my mind, and I almost felt like God spoke those same words to me that he spoke to Peter that day on the water. "Matt, you have so little faith. Why are you doubting me?" I stepped back and I got my focus readjusted, and I decided to reach out to the lady that made the phone call, and I sincerely apologized to her. It's my goal to help people, not hurt people. And so if I hurt someone, whether it be unintentionally or not, I need to apologize. And so I did. I just apologized. It's all my fault. I was driving the bus. I'm so sorry. She sent back a really nice letter, and it's all taken care of. We cannot, and I'm talking to myself here, allow ourselves to focus on problems or complaints. If we do, we will miss the move of God unraveling right before our very eyes. I'm going to share more on that here in just a moment. Now, that's an example of an external problem, but the internal problems, the internal complaints can be far worse. Some churches complain about the color of the paint, the color of the carpet, the color of the chairs or the pews, they complain if the furniture's moved from here to there, all kinds of things. But I'm so thankful and I'm so glad that is not us. I'm so thankful for this church that we can keep our mind focused and our eyes focused on which is most important, and that's the value of the human soul. I guarantee you, if we fall into the trap of complaining, we will miss the move of God. Verse 4 in Numbers chapter 11 says again, "Then the foreign rabble who were traveling with the Israelites began to crave the good things of Egypt. And the people of Israel also began to complain, 'Oh, for some meat. We remember the fish we used to eat for free in Egypt. We had all the cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, and garlics we wanted. But now our appetites are gone. All we ever see is this manna. The manna looked like small coriander seeds, and it was pale yellow like gum resin. The people would go out and gather it from the ground. They made flour by grinding it with hand mills or pounding it in mortars. Then they boiled it in a pot and made it into flat cakes. These cakes tasted like pastries baked with olive oil. The manna came down in the camp with the dew during the night.'" The second way to miss the move of God is by focusing on what you don't have rather than focusing on what you do have. Now, this not only applies to us as a church, but it applies to us personally. It's a mindset of lack. Notice the people of Israel. We want fish. We want cucumbers. We want melons, leeks, onions. Sure, we have manna, but manna's not good enough. We want something better. Now, I don't really need to explain this point too much because this is something that I've talked about more than once. But you can see this truth is woven all throughout the Bible. I talked about this when we talked about the letter F, feed and clothe the hurting. Every great move of God starts small. It starts with what we have in our hand. God is looking if we're going to be faithful with a little before he gives us more. Remember the verse from Zechariah 4:10, "Do not despise these small beginnings, for the Lord rejoices to see the work begin." God is wanting the work to begin, and that's our part. I have never been in a place in ministry or life where I've had everything I've wanted, but I've always been in a place in ministry and life where I've had everything I've needed to get the job done. We have to look at what God has placed in our hands and we have to use it. We have to be faithful with what he's given us because then and only then will he give us more. We all want to own the Porsche, but he's waiting to see how you treat the Pinto before he gives you the Porsche. Here's what happens. Let me personalize this a little bit now. Let me bring it a little bit down to earth. How many times do we look at social media and see a husband and wife smiling, on vacation, kids sitting there smiling, hearts popping off in the background, and they didn't even mean for it to, that's just what you're seeing. And you look at that and you say, "Oh, isn't that nice? Boy, look at them. I wish I had a family like that. Man, I wish my husband looked like that guy. I wish my marriage was like that." What we don't see is we don't see the meltdown that happened 30 minutes later when the husband and wife are now fighting because the kids are fighting over who has the biggest slice of pizza. And you want to smack them with a slice of pizza. And if you have kids, you know what I'm talking about. But they don't post that. I don't post pictures of Kyla running around the house with a frying pan wanting to hit me. You don't see that stuff. I don't turn around and say, "Wait, baby," and post on Facebook, "Pray for me." You just don't see that stuff. She doesn't really do that, by the way. She might now. But that's not what happens. You see, when we do that, what happens is we begin to compare and discouragement sets in. Even sometimes depression. We focus on what we do not have. And we always think that the grass is greener on the other side. The grass might be greener, but you have to water the side you're on, and who knows that the other grass on the other side isn't fake grass anyway. You have to water the side you're on. I guarantee you, if I look for greener grass and I jump the fence over there, it's only a matter of time before that grass is dead too, because the problem isn't the situation. The problem is me. It's me. Rather than focusing on our family and being thankful for the marriage we have, we instead focus on others. I wish I had a perfect marriage like that couple. Well, here's news for you. There's no such thing as a perfect marriage. Rather than wishing we had somebody else's life, what if instead we begin to focus on what we have and thank God for what He has given us? There could be a miracle unfolding right before your very eyes. Kids that God's given you that He's going to raise and He's going to train to change this world. And because we're so focused on we don't have this and this and this, we miss the miracle that He's placed right in front of us. We focus on what we don't have. What if instead we said, God, thank you for my marriage. Thank you for my children. Thank you that they are healthy. Thank you for the home that you've given us. Thank you for the food that you've placed on our table. When we focus so much on what we don't have, we can totally miss the miracles right in front of us. We cannot allow that spirit of want to come in and get that complaining, bitter heart that will cause us to miss a move of God. So again, there's two ways to miss a move of God. Number one, complaining, focusing on the problems. And number two, focusing on what we don't have. Notice what both of these have in common. They're both focus problems. They both deal with focus. Simply put, you can sum this up. You will miss the move of God in your life if your focus is wrong. Where does your focus need to be? It needs to be on Him. It needs to be on God. Because when you take your eyes off of Him and you begin to focus on everything else, you will lose. It's got to stay on Him. And then when it's on Him, you'll realize how many things in life just really don't matter that much. I can have a good marriage. I can have a good relationship if I start to focus on what I have. I'm going to close with this. A few weeks back, Lynn and her team were out on the streets on a Saturday afternoon visiting the kids that ride the bus. You know, I'd love it if you would join her team. She goes out every Saturday. She's got a few people that go with her. They just knock on doors. She can teach you how to do that. She can teach you how to win people for the glory of God. I encourage you to do that on Saturdays. It's not hard work. It's kind of scary at first. You might be a little nervous at first. Frankly, you might be flat out scared. This is normal. I want you to know that. But it goes away. Because when you face your fear, it'll eventually go away. This is how we grow. I promise you this. If you're not doing anything to step outside of your comfort zone, you're not growing. Growth happens outside of our comfort zone. It always has for me. I can go to every Bible study in the world, but my growth has happened when I've stepped outside of my comfort zone. It's like you're lifting heavier weight. That's how you build muscle. Anyway, they came to one home, and the mother is very distraught. This is just a few weeks ago. She just said that my kids have been taken away and they placed in another home. These are a couple precious kids on our bus route. The team was able to pray for her, and she looks at Lynn and she says, I know where they are. Could you guys go see them? And Lynn says, well, sure, we can go see them. The lady goes on to say that when social services were taking the kids out of the home, she said, they weren't asking me, Mom, why are we being removed? It had only been coming 2 weeks. She said, Mom, does this mean we can't ride that bus anymore and go to church? She said, my kids were more concerned about coming to your church than they were being pulled out of my home. She didn't understand that. So they said, sure, we'll go visit them. And so they went over there and they visited them. And even the people that were with them said, all they've been talking about is we're going to be able to go back to that church. And so we got their address. We were able to pick them up. But you see, that is what God is doing. He's bringing hope and healing to the hurting. The same night that we picked them up from their new address was the same night that the whole crime thing happened. Go figure. Like I said earlier, I have this feeling in my spirit that we're going to witness things here in the city of Green Bay that you or I have never witnessed before. It's new territory. It's miracle territory, and I don't want to be right in the middle of it and miss the whole thing. And likewise, I don't want you to be right in the middle of it and miss the whole thing.